Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6, the fully electric EV6 with a range of up to 528 kilometres. For more, visit kia.com.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. It's Joe at RTE.ie 51551. It's the text number and it's the tweet. Twitter machine that Imelda May used this morning to contact us. Then she phoned us. Imelda May, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you doing?
Good, good. And you want to start a campaign for what?
I'm not on a major quest, but I heard there was a talks about having a bank holiday, a new bank holiday, and I heard there was a one off for all the people on the front line, which is an amazing idea as a thank you. But there's something that's been close to my heart for a long time, is that I think there should be an annual bank holiday for Bridget's Day.
The 1st of February.
The 1st of February, Bridget's Day. And I think we should have a matron saint of Ireland as well as the patron saint. And wouldn't that put out a beautiful message to the world?
So, it would fall, like St. Patrick's Day, would fall on the date of February the 1st. Even if February the 1st next year is on a Tuesday.
I think a lot of people, I mean, that's not up to me to do, but obviously that would be ideal, wouldn't it? Of course, on our feast day, sure. But I think a lot of people celebrate it anyway. Huge amount of people.
Yeah.
And not necessarily Saint Bridget. I'm talking about Bridget the goddess, the member of the Tuatha Dé Danann, she's the matron saint for poetry and wisdom and healing, and it signals the beginning of, in bulk, the beginning of our spring. And it would be such a beautiful thing, so people who aren't religious can celebrate the pagan goddess, and those who are can celebrate the saint.
And
so it would cover all corners.
Yeah, sure would. And they are two different women, but they have been kind of morphed into the one, haven't they?
Exactly. You know your stuff. Of course you do, Joe. Yes, they're two different women. They reckon that Saint Bridget was called, so many people, women were called Bridget after the goddess. So, you know, she came hundreds of years later.
Now,
but she would have been named after the original goddess.
Now, given that St. Patrick's Day is renowned for rain and cold and damp, to go back nearly 40 days before that, to the beginning of February, we'll be freezing.
You don't have to go out.
That's true, yeah.
Nobody said you have to do that. You can stay in and have a lovely day. But I just think it would be such a lovely thing for men and women of Ireland to celebrate one of our pagan goddesses. She was such a deity, and she was loved and adored for thousands of years and still is to this day. And she represents creativity and healing and the arts, within poetry, which is a huge part of our tradition.
And it's unusual as well, even in the pantheon of saints, so to speak, if you can have such a thing, because they're all still alive in the eyes of many people. There's very few women. Stay with us, Imelda. Imelda May wants to start a campaign to have a bank holiday on St. Bridget's Day or Bridget's Day. There's two different women. One a pagan goddess. She was the goddess, as Imelda said. She knows her stuff of healing, of women, obviously, and of the beginning of spring, new life, of fertility. And then there's a Saint Bridget who's a different person, but again celebrated on the same day. Now, Dr. Elizabeth Dawson is a lecturer in medieval history at Carlow College, and I see, Elizabeth, you were an expert on the early cult of Saint Bridget.
Hi, Joe. I am. So I've studied Bridget for many years, and I suppose I look at the origins of St. Bridget. And while you were saying to Imelda there that, you know, the saint is maybe slightly different to how we understand her now, actually St. Bridget, from the very kind of nexus or the beginning of her cult, is someone who's associated with all of these things. She's kind of a thoroughly Irish saint who is associated with poetry, she's associated with healing, with childbirth. And so I think that's why she's really central to how people in Ireland still, to why people still really are drawn to her and to what we call her cult, so her kind of her saintly persona.
And it's been getting bigger in the last few years, has it? Well, in the last decade or so, I seem to be more conscious of St. Bridget's Day than I ever was. So it's not marked, and it's not marked publicly. Sure, it's not. Schools are still proceed if it's a normal day. But what do you think? What do you think of Imelda's May Day? What do you think of Imelda May saying we should have a Bridget's Day?
Well, absolutely. I mean, why not? You know, from the earliest Christian period, we know that St. Bridget was considered to be, you know, the other patron saint of Ireland alongside St. Patrick. And obviously we celebrate St. Patrick. So sure why not celebrate St. Bridget as well?
But we celebrate St. Patrick in so many ways, the names of streets, the names of cathedrals, the names of churches, the names. It's such a common name in Ireland. And the national holiday is March the 17th. Do you think, Elizabeth, that St. Bridget's Day or Bridget's Day should be a national holiday? Should be the national holiday is already on March the 17th. Do we have another national holiday, or we have a holiday in honour of Bridget, St. Bridget and Bridget the pagan goddess for the beginning of spring?
Yeah, well, so St. Bridget is very connected to, the pre-Christian celebration of Imbolc. Her death date is the 1st of February. There's a real connection there. So I suppose, you know, the beginning of spring, the 1st of February, is a date that's really, really important and has been important in Ireland for millennia. So,
and was it ever marked? Was it ever a holiday?
Well, the saints' days were all seen as celebrations of the death of the saint. So essentially the point at which the saint, you know, moves to the kingdom of God, so they get their saintly status. So, yeah, within the churches, it certainly would have been a day of celebration. Various different churches would have, in the medieval period, would have had their calendars, and they would have celebrated Bridget on that day. So, for example, they might have read out pieces of literature associated with St. Bridget.
And
you know,
is there anyone else in the pantheon that you think would have the same relevance, both in terms of pagan and Christian, the relevance of Bridget? Is there anyone else crying out for a national holiday, or is Bridget the prime candidate, as Imelda May wants to campaign on her behalf?
Yeah, I think Bridget is probably a kind of a leading figure.
Okay.
And the reason for that is that there's three, you know, the early church sees three patron saints of Ireland, and they are Patrick, Bridget, and St. Columba as well.
Oh, God.
And I think of those three, you know, Bridget and Patrick really stand out. And they complement each other, actually, in many different ways.
Okay, and given that so many of our frontline, one, she's the goddess of healing. I think this is what Amanda made that point already. But two, there's so many of our, it's supposed to be a bank holiday to thank our frontline workers, and the majority, not them all, I was a majority of frontline workers, from kitchen staff to nurses to midwives to doctors, consultants, surgeons, ICU, the majority are female. Now, that's a bit of reality, Imelda. Alan O'Reilly is from Carlow Weather. He's the expert on weather. Alan O'Reilly, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
We're talking about Imelda May's campaign. She wants the bank holiday, the pandemic bank holiday, to thank frontline workers, especially, to be on the 4th of February, St. Bridget's Day. What's the weather been like on the 4th of February, say, for the last 200 years, Alan?
Well, it varies massively, but it's generally quite cool.
Okay.
It can be even cold. A lot of rain, good bit of wind, and occasionally snow. A lot of people don't realise that February is actually one of our highest risk months for snow.
Oh, is it?
And while you know, historically St. Bridget marked the start of spring, it's actually still winter in the meteorological season. So spring doesn't start until the 1st of March. So in terms of bank holidays, it's kind of going to be a gamble weather-wise. And the other thing is, you only get 9 hours of daylight. You're going to have sunset on the 1st of February, it's going to be about 5:10. As where, if you were to pick, say, July, sunset isn't until 10 p.m. and you have 16 and a half hours of daylight.
Imelda, Alan O'Reilly, the meteorologist, he isn't just raining on your parade, he's snowing on your parade.
That could be very beautiful. And you can do a hell of a lot in 9 hours. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's plenty of time to celebrate. Like I said, you don't have to go out. But by the way, this isn't my campaign you're saying. I'm calling for it. There's a huge amount of people calling for it.
Okay.
So I just felt like, as any member of the public, I just got in touch with Joe Duffy. If you want something done, you know, you just call Joe Duffy, call Liveline like everybody else.
Imelda, stay there for a sec. Monica Schaefer, you're listening to Imelda. What do you think? What day would you pick?
Hi, Joe. Hi, Imelda and Elizabeth. I would pick a day in September. And I pick a day in September because I think September is a very good time to remember and appreciate all of the people who worked so hard to get us through this horrendous pandemic. All the people who are the frontline, but also the silent backline, the people behind the frontline workers, the people who are at home minding the kids so other people could be in the frontline. Not just the doctors, nurses, I absolutely 100% appreciate them, but also the bus drivers, the postal workers, the homeschoolers, the people who had to learn how to be a teacher in the front room while somebody else was trying to run their office in the back room. You know, the people who couldn't do their leaving cert in the regular way or the junior cert, the people who missed out in their TY year, the people who were in the care homes, the people who looked after the elderly who couldn't, the families that couldn't visit their elderly on their 100th birthday or their other significant occasions, the people who never saw the outside again and went to their death, be it from COVID or otherwise, from maybe just from age or whatever, who never got outside again. Those people, the people who had to go through maternity visits and their significant other couldn't be with them through really difficult times.
Yeah,
the dentist who had to look into the mouths of people who, you know, during COVID.
But Monica, you've taken it further. You've already written to a government. What did you say in your letter?
I wrote back in May of last year, so more than 12 months ago, I wrote to Simon Harris, because he was the minister at the time, and I wrote to him and I said, you know, please, you know, can we have a day to remember and celebrate? Because I can't say thank you enough to all the people that kept this country going, to all the people who did all the fantastic things to keep the lights on, to keep everything going, keep the shops stocked, to, you know, to keep the world moving when things looked really bleak. And I want to thank all those people in a way to remember them all and to remember the people that didn't make it, to remember the people who are still suffering from long COVID, to remember the people who worked so hard in their front room or their back room office. And, you know, I just think September would be a good time. The weather's decent. We've got long hours of daylight. We don't have a public holiday in September. We've got one at the beginning of August and we've got one at the end of October. Mm. There's a big gap in the middle there. There's a lovely spot there when the weather's usually good. And it'd be really nice to remember people and to appreciate people and to respect all the people that have passed on.
But I just wonder...
A time of grieving.
What response did you get from the government minister?
I got a very nice response and he said, great idea. I definitely think this is a good idea. It's a little bit early. We're still in the throes of the pandemic. At that stage, the vaccinations weren't out yet. And, you know, and he said, you're a bit early with your idea, but I'll definitely keep that in mind. And when the time is right, we will
well,
consider
it. It looks like the time is right to consider for a number of reasons. Now, we're also aware, and you mentioned it, Monica and Imelda mentioned, we're very cognizant of over 5,000 people dying. Nearly 5 million people on this earth have died, nearly 400,000 cases in this republic alone of people who've contracted COVID. So it's a savage, savage illness. But again, this is on the day when Bloomberg say that the best country in the world for dealing with COVID has been Ireland, believe it or not. Well, believe it, that's what they're saying. And it's been widely reported. But Monica, also, is Imelda's date not better? Sorry, the date that's Imelda supporting not better? Because COVID came to Ireland, I think it was January 27th in 2019, when we had our first call about COVID. Now, there was no cases. It was a call from China, actually, an Irishman living in China, saying how awful it was. But so people associate February, then we had Leo Varadkar's famous speech from the steps of Washington in March.
Joe, it's not the coming of the pandemic that I want to celebrate.
Okay.
It's the how we dealt with it. We in Ireland dealt with this absolutely brilliantly. Every single man, woman and child who did their bit
and who didn't complain and who got up and did whatever they had to do every day and went to school at home every day or went to work at home or did or drove a bus or posted a letter or went to the front line or, you know, who stocked those shelves, every single one of those people, and we're still doing it, you know, and everybody who went out and got their vaccination and everybody who put on a mask and everybody who respected each other's social distance and who didn't go and visit their granny or hug somebody at Christmas time or didn't go to visit their child living abroad or vice versa. I want all those people to be remembered and appreciated, and I think this is what the day is about. And I appreciate what Imelda's saying, and I think the idea of St. Bridget is lovely. However, we're in a multicultural society now. We've got people of every race and religion and background. And
but there's two Bridgets. There's St. Bridget and there's a pagan goddess, Bridget. Both of them are marked on Bridget's Day, as it happens.
But I want to celebrate the saints we have today, the people around you, the people the daily people now who allowed us to be in the position we're in right now. And it's horrendous that 5,000 people died and all the other people that got sick and all the people who have long COVID and all the people who didn't get their cancer treatment or other treatments because of, you know, the hospitals were full. But we only lost that many people. We were looking at a very dark place with a lot more lives. And if we just look a little way across the water to our next door neighbours, how many people have been lost there?
But I'm just wondering, you're saying September, but September's just finished 2 days, 3 days left.
I know, but I'm talking about an annual holiday. This is something, you think about the flu of 1918, you know, we're still the effects of that are still apparent many, many, many years, 100 years later. We should remember these people forever.
Absolutely, the people we've lost, we remember them forever. Okay. Stay there, Monica. Mary is on the line. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is our text number. Imelda May has contacted the programme. She wants to support the campaign for the frontline bank holiday to be on St. Bridget's Day, which is the 4th of February. Now, I'm also thinking, a lot of people were saying over the 18, 19 months at this stage, when they couldn't have funerals, when they couldn't have weddings, when they couldn't have celebrations, that we will have a celebration down the road. Now, that could be a visit to a graveyard, it could be a service, it could be a party, whatever, depending on the occasion. But if it was declared now to be on February the 4th, that would give people time to prepare. Mary, what do you think of Bridget's Day being on the 4th of February and it being a public holiday?
Hi, Joe. Yeah, I totally agree with St. Bridget's Day. St. Bridget, you hear some people saying there that Ireland is different, there's different religions. St. Bridget was a Christian. She was neither Catholic nor Protestant nor any other religion. Like St. Patrick, he brought Christianity to Ireland. With St. Patrick, the Druids at that time used to worship the sun. St. Patrick then, he was the one really that brought in the Celtic cross. So basically, the pagans and the Druids used to worship the sun. That was a big part in their life. He put a cross through it. So basically, he made a pagan symbol Christian. St. Bridget also was, I know they're called saints, but they're like St. Patrick, it's celebrated north and south by all religions. St. Bridget as well, she was from a very wealthy family. Her father wanted her to get married, but she didn't want to get married. So when her father was dying, she converted him to Christianity by something very, very simple, like by making the St. Bridget's cross. And I know in parts of the West of Ireland, I live in the West of Ireland, it's a very, very big tradition, St. Bridget's, because people out around the country, they have flowers, garlands of flowers, about, you know, just to welcome in the spring. They have the opening the windows, the fresh air. You have the daffodils and the snowdrops and the rebirth of young lambs in the field. And a lot of people in the country, we still use the St. Bridget's cross. Years ago, it used to be made of straw or even grass, and now it's made of rushes. So the tradition would be if somebody moved into a home, you get them the St. Bridget's cross and they put it over the door to keep the house from safe and to prevent it from fire and so on. And a lot of us still do that now. You don't automatically give it to one neighbour or the other, but you give it to neighbours throughout the year, and it's a lovely gift to get, but somebody would make a St. Bridget's cross for you and just to give it to you. Perhaps it's something with the year that's in it, that we could do something, that a cross for everyone that had passed away during the COVID thing, that we keep this tradition going.
In their mind.
And yeah. They'd also have like the dancing. It was like, you know, I know a lot of people are saying throughout the year, like January, February is kind of, January is kind of boring. February is the start of a new life. It gives us all hope. It's like a new beginning. And it's something we should keep for ourselves, because Halloween was an Irish event, and that's kind of more American now, but that started off in Ireland, the Halloween tradition. But I think for the St. Bridget, it would be a lovely day for everyone and for the schools, and kind of have it as a special day. We keep those traditions of the little bonfires and the dancing in the houses and that. So that's why.
Okay, well argued, Mary. Well, I don't even. Yeah. I don't think you took a breath there for the last 4.5 minutes.
I was so nervous. Oh, George,
God, you should be. You must be taking breathing lessons from Imelda May. You did it so well. Lisa Ann Cairns is in Wexford. Yeah, yes or no to the pandemic bank holiday? Now, there's two arguments going on. One is Imelda is very much saying we should have a bank holiday every year for the matron saint of Ireland. We're pretty low when it comes to international comparisons about bank holidays. But Imelda is saying February the 4th every year. The government are saying we're thinking of one-off, and Imelda saying that day as well. But what do you think of St. Bridget's Day being the national holiday, at least? A national holiday.
Yeah. Hi, Joe. Yes, I would 100% agree with Imelda. And I think it's a golden opportunity now to do this. It is something that's been mooted for a long time. Mm-hmm. And having St. Bridget's Day recognised as a national day, I think it would be a great opportunity to tie it in with what that lady was saying about being thankful about how we all coped with COVID, etc. And it would be purely an ongoing thing, an annual thing, not just, you know, this is something that we're talking about that would be for future, for years to come. And St. Bridget, there's St. Bridget and there's the goddess Bridget. And I think that ties in as well with what one of the ladies were saying there about it being a because of our multicultural society, that there was the goddess pagan Bridget and there was the Christian Saint Bridget, and they would be tied in together. And I think that would be a very good way of recognising.
And what about your across the border there in Carlow, Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather said the weather, he's been looking back on the weather on the 1st of February for many a long year, and he says it's brutal.
But you see, what's the weather got to do with having our national day? I mean, Patrick's Day can be brutal as well, let's face it. And I don't think the weather really would matter on a thing like this. Mm-hmm. It is celebrating a new beginning, fresh start. The spring is coming, and it kind of breaks up that long gap down to Easter, doesn't it? Especially for schools and that. But also, I think it's really important that it's a feminine issue. It's a woman's day.
A woman who's been recognised.
I think, you know, there's lots of lip service given about this, and here's a golden opportunity now to recognise a woman, two women, two different women, the goddess and St. Bridget.
Well, it's
and I think it would be really important. I don't think weather really is the issue.
Okay, and there's no such, what did it say? There should be no such thing as bad weather in Ireland. Just you can be badly dressed for the weather that's available.
Exactly.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. And John Martin, for or against the idea that Imelda is championing.
Hello, Joe. Thank you very much for taking my call. I think it's an absolute wonderful idea that Imelda has come up with. Firstly, it's for the matron saint of Ireland. And to celebrate this would be celebrating all the work that the frontline workers put in during the pandemic. And also for the people who are suffering from post-trauma stress disorder, from people who have been locked down to COVID, and also elderly people who have been locked in, they're still suffering. Okay, people who have lost relatives and so on and so forth due to COVID. And I think that this would be an absolutely marvellous idea, a new beginning, a matron saint of Ireland on the first day of spring. Would be a new beginning for everybody.
Okay.
To have this celebrated every year.
Okay, John Martin, Ciarán O'Coffig is in Connemara. Ciarán.
Hi, Joe.
Your point, please.
Well, I'm just supporting Imelda. I think it's a great idea. It's the celebration or the welcome to spring. We had four traditional festivals in this country, festivals, I think they call them, Fáilte Tine, Imbolg, Beltane, Lonnasa, and Samhain, each to welcome the next season in. And, you know, of course, on top of that, with Christianity, with Bríd before then, or St. Bridget before then, it was Bríd. But at the end of the day, these are things we do traditionally and we should continue to do.
Okay, and it can't be, someone pointed out, it can't be shortened to saying to Paddy's Day. People hate that nomenclature a lot of the
time. Yeah, well, I can't stand it either, but okay. I would be speaking in Irish when I refer to it generally, so I don't have to say Paddy's Day. I say a lot
Okay. And even if it was wet and cold and damp and snowing and...
You'd have your bonfire.
Okay.
Well, Joe, okay. This is John here in Limerick.
I also
disagree totally with the shorting St. Patrick to Paddy's Day.
And this is coming in
the way as well. And as far as the weather is concerned, shall we celebrate the birth of Jesus on the 25th of December?
That's true. That's very true.
It's
also the middle. It wasn't originally from the middle of winter. Imelda, thanks, John. Thanks, Imelda. I cannot see... and Rebecca, who's our producer today, Rebecca Meehan, she cannot see on the hundreds of texts are coming in. She cannot see anyone disagreeing with you about that day.
Lovely.
There you are now.
And like a few of the previous callers were saying, it's just that I know this is about frontline workers, and I'm forever grateful to them. Absolutely forever grateful. With this festival, like I said, Bridget, she represents all kinds of creativity, but she also represents hugely rebirth, healing and rebirth. And I think that's what we've done so well in this country over the last while, that those frontline workers brought healing, and hopefully now with the spring, that's why I was thinking with the spring forward, it is rebirth, it's a chance to start again, which I hope we have. So it's just an idea, I'm just throwing it out there as a member of the public.
Because
that other woman said, so many people celebrate it anyway, and it's just not recognised that those celebrations are going on, and to tie it in with the frontline workers and with healing and rebirth and with new beginnings, I think would be beautiful.
I hear a song or a poem coming on, Imelda. Okay, Imelda Mayday.
No, thanks for opening discussions.
Well, you start. You're the one who got, and we appreciate it. Imelda May, stay well, stay safe, you and your family. Imelda, that's a wonderful. Imelda May calling for, not a Mayday, we have a Mayday holiday, but a St. Bridget's Day or a Bridget's Day holiday on February the 4th.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Well, as you know, the hype has been incredible. No Time to Die. It got generally good reviews. Lukewarm review by Donald Clark, who I trust. He said the first 30 minutes are the best part of it. But very good reviews in the UK papers today, all 5-star. Now, yesterday, this is the message we got. Every time a new James Bond movie is made, the producers are asked to reconsider their representation of disfigurement, facial disfigurement. Every time they seem to say they don't care. The new movie out this week, as you know, No Time to Die, is also No Time to Change that representation, because the new film out this week is no exception. This time, the two villains, the two baddies, have facial disfigurements. And it is a serious, serious... I mentioned it in the promo there an hour ago, Ronan. Now, Tom Hickey's a well-known Cork Examiner journalist and has written about this before because of his own experience. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What do you think of that point our caller made, that they are, I'm part of, sick, sore and tired of villains being portrayed as people with facial disfigurement?
Well, I'm in total agreement. I'm afraid this has gone on for years and years. The problem is perpetuated not just by James Bond films, mm-hmm. but also by other well-known franchises like Star Wars, and also characters like Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also in more recent films like Black Panther and Wonder Woman. And in Wonder Woman, the villain was a female character with a disfigurement.
Wow.
I find it makes people like myself who already have a prominent facial disfigurement, have had to live with it for over 60 years. I find that it makes life a bit more unbearable. It perpetuates the myth that those of us with facial disfigurements are somehow evil because we're being portrayed as villains in so many films.
And as you say, because when we were reading this morning, I looked up articles in the States, it is the amount of villains in movies that have facial disfigurements is phenomenal. It's phenomenal. Yeah. Now, there are some heroes in some movies that have facial differences, so to speak, but they are very, very much in the minority. Now, when, as you say, 60 years living with this, and again, it was an accident in your case, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was burned in a fire at home.
Yeah. And what age, so, what age were you then?
I was just... I was two when it happened. So I spent 2.5 years in the hospital afterwards.
Oh,
and then I had a succession of operations until I was in my early 30s.
Wow. And how many operations did you end up having?
Oh, God. I couldn't tell you because I haven't seen the files. The files are long gone now. But I would say scores, so, you know, I don't know offhand.
Now, there is an organisation called Changing Faces, and they have, in the UK, they're a charity, but they are campaigning for scriptwriters, casting directors, film producers, production companies and directors to stop using scars, burns or marks as a shorthand for villainy. And the British Film Institute, which is a major step. The British Film Institute was the first organisation to say to sign up to our campaign. They have committed to stop funding films in which negative characteristics are depicted through scars or facial difference. Now, I don't know, is there such a policy here with the IFA, the Irish Film Board, which is an offshoot of a government department, effectively, and they do, and there's tax breaks for movies, but can you actually influence who plays what in a movie?
That's a good question. I think the campaign by Changing Faces is raising awareness. They launched it yesterday to coincide with the premiere of No Time to Die, because the Bond franchise is one of the biggest offenders and they really couldn't care less about criticism. But I suppose the problem with the trope that they're using is that it perpetuates the myth that beauty is good and disfigurement or disability is bad.
Yeah.
And that's the problem I will have with it, and a lot of people in my situation would feel the very same way.
And have you gone to previous James Bond movies? Because the same, Blofeld has been in it a good while, Christopher. But again, it's Christopher Weiss, again, with facial disfigurements added by the costume department. Have you gone to see James Bond movies before, and how did you react?
I went to the early ones, Joe. I've seen the others, I think, on TV. But I went to the early ones, and I must say the earliest one was that I noticed in particular was Blofeld, the character of Blofeld.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the earliest times that I had seen somebody who was disfigured.
Yeah.
I hadn't really, in real life, I hadn't seen people who had facial disfigurement at all until I was in my late teens.
Okay.
So, and that's the problem with facial disfigurement, is a lot of it back then was hidden away. People were discouraged from going out, especially if they had children, bringing them out and interacting with others in case they would be vilified or would be abused or even attacked in some cases. So it's campaigns like this are creating an awareness that, unfortunately, when you create a character who has an evil character who has a disfigurement of any kind, it creates an issue with people, and it unfortunately makes it harder, as I said, for people. Mm-hmm. You know.
When you were young, would that have been? And again, it's no fault of anybody, but would that have been your experience that you were kept indoors?
No,
Are you stayed indoors?
No, Joe, I wasn't kept indoors, no. My parents were much more enlightened than that.
Right.
But, and I lived near the city centre, very close to the city centre, so I would often go to the cinema and stuff like that. It was only as I got a bit older that I became more aware of my face. Mm-hmm. And I suppose maybe subconsciously too, if I was watching villains, disfigured villains in films or TV, that it may have seeped into my consciousness, you know, or subconsciousness. So.
And you reminded as well. And
But
you reminded as well, 76 in movies. And as you say, The Lion King, the villain is called Scar. 76% of villains in movies have scars.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. And the real problem is that the biggest films, the biggest action films, tend to have characters who are disfigured. And that makes it worse because it means the audience is much bigger. And unfortunately, you know, those of us who are facially disfigured, we've had to deal with, and a lot are still dealing with bullying, social isolation, and fear. And this doesn't help, you know.
Yeah. Okay, say with us, Tom, because Liam Soff has been on our program before and about his beautiful daughter, Elizabeth. And Elizabeth had an accident when she was in hospital, actually. Liam, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
And how are you doing, Liam? And how is Elizabeth?
Oh, she's doing amazing. She's 7 years old now. She's just raised a large amount of money for a laser machine for the Children's Hospital here in Birmingham. So she's really pleased with herself at the moment.
That's because when you contacted us first, I think you were in... You were in the Middle East, weren't you? That's where the accident happened.
So that's where it happened when she was 6 months old. Yeah,
And she was in a hospital. It was a hospital, wasn't it?
Well, she was there. She was initially taken to the hospital in Qatar in the Middle East, and then flown here to Birmingham to the Children's Hospital, where she's been a patient, you know, ever since. So she still visits there very frequently for reconstruction and skin graft operations.
Yeah, because it was I think it was the air conditioning unit in your home. Went, did that go?
Right. Yeah. So she was very severely injured. She's scarred everywhere in her face, her body. She's lost most of her fingers, one of her ears, all of her hair, and part of her nose. So you know she's looks very different.
So what is? She's still very young.
Yeah.
How did you deal with it? Well, coping with an accident of that catastrophic nature in itself, but then to deal with is horrific, and there's no way around that. But then to be reminded, or are you reminded? Tell me, when you see the difference in terms of you outlined it there, the difference in Elizabeth's face and hands and ears and that. How does that affect you at this stage?
I don't know. I suppose she was so young when the accident happened that it's just been part of our lives for so long. Mm-hmm. You know, she doesn't remember a time when she wasn't burnt or looking different. So, you know, for her, it's just something that it's just part of her life. She has to deal with it every day. You know, every time she looks in the mirror, every time she walks outside the door, there's no hiding it. There's no getting away from it. It's not like she meets everyone and then they all know, you know, every day there's a new group of people. So it's like a constant reminder. And it's, you know, it's very, for us, myself and my wife, Sinead, it's a conscious decision every day how we deal with it. And we choose to be positive. You know, we could make a choice to look at it as we're lucky because she survived rather than we're unlucky because it happened in the first place. And that's a conscious decision to deal with it in a positive way. And hopefully we're kind of passing that on to her.
Yeah. And how do people react? Insofar as you can generalize.
Well, it's a huge variety. Yeah. You know, it's a huge variety. I mean, the vast majority of people, you know, approach her, normally and treat her like a normal child, which she is. You know, that we've had a huge amount of support with this raising money for the children's hospital. You know, thousands of people donating money to us and giving us messages and everything. So on the whole, everyone is supportive and, you know, treats her like a normal child. There are obviously small group of people who, you know, stare at her, make comments, say nasty things, and treat her differently. You know, there are those people, and she will have to deal with those people her whole life, you know.
Yeah. And what do you think, Liam, of what Tom is saying? That, well, he's obviously he's in his 60s, and he, well, you heard it, but it's almost a frustration in his voice. There is a campaign apparently been going on for years to stop movies like Bond movies portraying villains as people with facial scars and facial burns.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say first that I'm a tourist in this. You know, I've no scar, I've no visual difference. My only experience is true Elizabeth.
Yeah, okay.
But I feel that movies do use it as a shortcut. Mm-hmm. But they do for good guys and bad guys, you know.
But it's more than it. 76% villains have scars. 26% heroes have some facial difference. So it's 3-1. You there, Liam? He's after. Yeah. I know Liam is on WhatsApp. He might have dropped. But it is, as Tom pointed out, 76%. Villains have facial scars or facial burns, and okay, there are some heroes who are given that, but there is, as I say, a fascinating campaign. I'll come back to Tom and indeed to Liam, who's on WhatsApp after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
It's an issue that's been raised, and as I said yesterday, to coincide with the launch of the new Bond movie, and it is from an organisation in the UK called Changing Faces, and thanks to Tom Hickey, who's alerted us to all of this. I was unaware, but when you think about it, why are the vast majority of villains in movies portrayed as having facial disfigurement, be it burns or be it scars or whatever? And Tom Hickey's been explaining that he was 2 years of age when he was, like so many of us, but it went tragically wrong, and that is that he was playing with fire, bits of paper, and his bib caught fire, his plastic bib caught fire, and he spent 2 years in hospital with facial burns. And then Liam Stoff has been on the programme before, because at that stage he was in the Middle East, and he was trying to get home with his daughter, who had been in her cot at home, and I think the air conditioning caught fire and dripped down on her. And as Liam pointed out there, there's still a number of scars. Tom, Liam's back with us, but Liam's point, which I thought was a very insightful way of saying it, that he said, I'm a tourist in this. Obviously, he's with his daughter all the time. But what was it like for you as a child with people staring at you, if they did?
It was very, very difficult. I think the problem I had with staring was that I wasn't able to handle it. I had no one really to guide me through how to handle it. Mm-hmm. So I was very insecure. I had to deal a lot with not just abuse thrown at me, sometimes by just kids my own age, which is kind of fair enough, but often by adults too. And sometimes I would be physically attacked. I had to, that you can kind of deal with up to a point, but if they're bigger than you, you can't. Usually what would happen would be that I would come home and I would just cry in my room, in my bedroom, and I wouldn't tell my parents about it. I just kept it to myself. The biggest problem, I think, was that I was unable to talk to somebody who was going through the same experience as myself. Mm-hmm. Because in those days, that's in the early 60s, I didn't have, there were no support groups. There was no psychological help for me after I was burned, nor was there any for my parents, I should also mention. And that exacerbated things, you know. Yeah. I didn't know anyone who was facially disfigured. I didn't meet anyone who was... I didn't meet anyone who was disfigured like myself. So it made it much more difficult to deal with.
And otherwise, unfortunately, Liam's WhatsApp has gone again on us. By the way, I will tweet all details of that Liam's campaign for equipment for the hospital that his daughter has been looked after so well. She's now patient now, but she was looked after so well in. Okay, Tom Mickey, I think so many people would be unaware of the things, the internal prejudices so much, and to raise the issue of why so many villains, 76% are portrayed with facial disfigurement, I think is a great, great service. Tom Hickey is formerly, by the way, chief sub-editor of that wonderful paper, The Cork Examiner, which became The Examiner. Tom Hickey and Ballincollig, good to meet you, Malcolm, Tom, and we'll talk soon. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Sean Heffernan is there on the earlier debate. Go ahead, Sean, your point, please.
Yes, you were talking earlier about the additional holiday for nurses, yeah. And they've also been speaking on giving us an additional, 10 days leave. But I think this is a huge distraction from the major issue, which is most important, which is the huge understaffing mm-hmm. in the hospitals and the lack of retention. I mean, Ireland bleeds nurses to Australia and US and Canada and Japan and just all over. And we have to stop this. We have to retain our experienced staff and keep them here. I don't know any Irish nurses really that have left because they don't want to stay in their country. It's a matter of necessity for them financially.
Okay. And it's... So you're basically saying it should be a pay increase. It should be...
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
To keep Ireland on task, I mean, some of the largest companies in the world, I'm from San Francisco, and the same companies that have now, refused... Well, Ireland won't accept their taxes, right? Are the ones that also gentrified San Francisco and made it completely unlivable. And that's what's happening here in Dublin. I've been looking for 2 months. I can't find a place to live. I've been offered multiple jobs. Mm-hmm. I'm experienced enough to be a level 3 manager, and yet I get paid 40% of what I do at home. I'm here to help nurses to organize and to, figure out how to solve these retention issues. But a 20% pay increase would be minimum to retain a staff, I believe. And, to get those HSE, the waiting list down. I mean, 900,000 is astronomical.
And along, that was back to last Wednesday's very powerful program with Damien and produced by Angus.
Yeah.
Where are you living now, Shauna?
I'm living in a hostel.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long are you living in a hostel?
I've been here for a month. I was in an Airbnb before. But, on €26 an hour, I've been the nurse for over 10 years, €26, before tax, that leaves me at paying 70% of my income in rent. It's not sustainable. How am I supposed to have a family and survive? And who is going to teach the young nurses to be great nurses if I leave and others like me leave again?
as Shauna, I have before. Shauna, have you got privacy in the hostel? What facilities do you have?
What do you mean by that?
Well, do you have your own room, your own bathroom, your ensuite? Or...
I share with one or two other people, and guess what? They're students who can't find housing. We're kind of all in this crisis together of wanting to be in this country for various reasons and not being able to find affordable accommodation. You know, that's been on the news a lot lately as well.
Well, when you say you're a level three, does that mean you're an ICU nurse?
I am an ICU nurse with a specialty in anesthesia and surgical recovery. So I floated to COVID when we stopped doing surgeries in California. I moved here to Ireland in 2019 and left during the COVID crisis to go back feeling like Ireland was kind of going to fall apart. And it did, you know, in many ways. And the HSE is really in shambles, and it doesn't have to be. It's really not that difficult. But the number one thing to do is to pay staff appropriately.
Okay. Point so strongly made again, Shauna. That's Shauna Heffernan. Thank you, Shauna.
Thanks now, so much, Joe. Big fan.
Yeah, thanks for you. Very kind. And I'm a big fan, as we all are, frontline workers like yourself, Shauna, more importantly. Jane McNulty, again, another issue which has come up a few weeks ago. It's about all the idle houses lying there, good houses. We had a number of callers. Because the occupants are in nursing homes under the Fair Deal scheme. Now, we've had a phone call from a nursing home. Her name is Jane McNulty. Jane, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
And you are living in a nursing home at the moment.
I am indeed, Joe.
And
yes.
Tell us how you got there and how are you managing?
It's a bit of a long story. I'll try and keep it as short as possible. I was in the hospital last year. I fell and broke my hip. Now, I'd had other health issues. Okay. I was just unfortunate with my bones. And while I was in the hospital, I caught the COVID. Right. And between the digs and the reels, I didn't know what I was going to do when I left. But I happened to be very friendly with the owner of a nursing home here that my mother is in. So I was in contact with him. So thanks to him, I got into the nursing home here in Kildare.
Okay.
And
so you organised that yourself?
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And did you organise the Fair Deal scheme?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Well, with the some help from the nursing home.
Yeah, there's a lot of paperwork, yeah.
Yeah, an awful lot of paperwork. But the point I was making in my email, Joe, was that I was not aware of all the pitfalls involved in the Fair Deal scheme.
Okay.
Such as they would take away my household benefits, and they take away my fuel allowance. They take away the fact that I'd have to insure my house with nobody in it.
Yeah,
insurance company wanted €1,000 for that.
Yeah, very hard to get done, yeah.
Yeah, so everything is going from me. Do you know what I mean? I love my house. I have it for 40 years. And it's falling into rack and ruin in front of my eyes because I can't afford to keep it, the upkeep of it.
And you can't rent it.
I can't rent it, exactly. That's the big issue now. I mean, I hear all those unfortunate people on your programme saying they can't get somewhere.
Just now, Shauna, living in a hostel.
Yeah, it's just so crazy. Do you know what I mean? And I don't know what the answer is, Joe. I honestly don't know what. Well, I do. Let me rent my house for a small amount even that I could give someone a bed. And then that has helped me have some funds because I only have 20% of my income to cover like my costs here in terms of hair and activities. And if I wanted a taxi somewhere, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I've no spare cash. And yet I'm sitting on a little gold mine that I can't touch.
And you're getting an insurance bill. That's gone up for your house.
Yeah.
You're still getting, when you say you lose your household benefit, do you lose your free television licence?
Yeah, everything, Joe.
Okay.
I know, sure, I didn't know it. And to make matters worse and add injury to insult, they keep writing to me telling me I have to pay my television licence now. Do you know what I mean? There is absolutely no joint.
I presume you have an ESB bill to pay for your house.
I do, and a gas bill. Yeah.
And remember,
I have to pay those.
Again, as we discovered here a few weeks ago, even if you're not using any electricity, there's so many standing charges on the bill that you're paying.
And I have to pay the property tax. So I'm working on that to try and defer it, but I still have to pay it. So it's all out, everything, all my outgoings, for no reason at all.
Okay, well, just to point out, if you did rent out your house, you are allowed to rent it out, but you would have to give 80% of the rent to the HSE, to the fair deal. Yeah, so that would leave...
That's exactly it.
And that would only leave you 20% to try and keep the house going, which wouldn't be worth it.
I looked into that. It wouldn't be feasible, Joe, and then the worry of getting someone in and all that.
And is there anyone in? Have you a canary or a goldfish or anything in the house? Oh, a cat.
Okay. Mr. Shadow, yes, he's there minding the house.
Mr. Shadow was in the house?
Yes, he has a cat trap.
Does he come visit you or you visit him?
I have a very good friend who takes me over nearly every second day to visit him. And I also pay somebody every odd day to go in and feed him.
And how does Shadow manage with the food then?
Oh, we feed him every day. He's doing well. And we leave unopened packets for him as well as the feed. And he's able to open the packets himself and feed himself. Oh, yes, very intelligent. Takes after his owner.
And Jane, what's your prospect now? And Darren, you sound in fantastic health. Thank God. I know you say your bones are letting you down every now and again. Yeah. But do you see yourself staying in the nursing home?
I don't want to stay in it, Joe. The nursing home is wonderful. But I am too young to be in here. I want to be out. I want to be in my own house. And I love a lovely house with lovely bits of pieces in it, belonging to my parents' house and all that sort of thing. And they're just lying there. And I can't sell them. They wouldn't be of any value. They're emotional value to me. I just don't know where to turn. As I said to a friend of mine, I'll be in a tent down by the Liffey at the rate I'm going with this HSE, and no joined up thinking.
And you think, from what you're saying, your argument is, I got the fair deal, I got into a nursing home. Nursing homes are expensive, we know that. And they're because of their level of staff and the level of care, which is really important. But your point is, you've lost, it seems, your financial independence.
Absolutely, Joe. Absolutely now. Yeah. And it's bad enough, like, to lose, lose your house and your ability to drive and those sort of things, which are nobody's fault, really. Mm-hmm. Well, the ability to drive. I have lost those. I have been on to Age Action. I have been on to, there's another crowd, Sage. They told me to go to MABS. And I felt highly insulted. I am not in debt through my own fault.
Okay.
You know, MABS, God almighty.
And when you contact them, what is the sting of your question, Jane? Are you saying to them, can I go live at home with support? Or what are you saying to them?
What I am trying to do is to get the people who devised this Fair Deal scheme to remove the restriction on you renting your house.
Okay, absolutely.
That's what I want. That's the main thing. And that I don't have to give what I obtain in rent over to the HSE. I mean, that's a catch-22 situation.
Because, as you say, it's 80%. And even if you said to yourself, well, I can't organise all that myself, getting tenants and interviewing tenants, I'll hire a management committee, sure, you'll have nothing left out of your 20%.
Now you have it, Joe. That's it, exactly. Yeah. And the worry of that, you know.
And what's your routine like in the nursing home?
Well, it's not great right now. I was born in 45 and I am relatively young at heart. And I find it very boring, to be honest. Okay. Very boring. Luckily, I'm a good reader and I read the paper and I have one or two books.
Yeah.
But there isn't very... They have activities here, but I wouldn't be into a lot of them. They're for older people. Mm. You know, and I'm not disparaging older people anyway. You know, it's just, I've no stimulation, which is what I need, you know.
And so, are you tempted to leave, then, Jane?
I am.
Just get up and go?
Yes, I am.
And where would you go?
I'd have to go home. and see if I could manage as best I can on my own. But that brings up another can of worms, because I couldn't get any help from the HSE in terms of home help or that over the last 2 years. All they'd offer me was somebody for to give me a shower once a week. Wonderful.
Once a week.
Yeah.
So even though, and I mean this in a, you're a citizen of the state, and that's why the state exists, to help to do good. Even though the Fair Deal will be paying a significant amount to the nursing home for your accommodation.
Oh, they would, all right. Yeah, they would.
But you're saying, I think, well, are you, that I'll be cheaper on the state, so to speak, and you've lived in the country, but I'd be cheaper on the state if I could go home with some supports.
Exactly, Joe. Okay. That's exactly it. Yeah.
And you were never given that option?
Never. And I have tried everything.
You emailed us, so you have an iPad or a computer.
Oh, I have a computer. I used to teach information technology.
Oh, well done.
Before I came in here, I used to do it from home, you know, one-to-one training. I loved it because I love people, and I'd be quite a gregarious person. But I don't have that option now. I can't very well start it up in here.
And have you got Wi-Fi in there? Have you good?
Terrific Wi-Fi
brilliant,
in here.
Brilliant.
Great.
So you're okay for machinery and all that?
Okay. I am. Okay. Yeah.
And where are you from originally, Jane?
I'm from Clonskee South County, Dublin. I lived there with my parents for a long time. And in 1981, I bought a house in Selbridge because they were cheaper even then than I couldn't afford to pay up in Dublin 14. So I've been in the house here, and I love where I'm living. It's Selbridge. It's a lovely place and lovely walks and everything around it. You know,
and your neighbours,
millions of shops. Okay, let's see.
And you bought your house in 1980. So you were doing information technology before information technology came along.
Well, I was always interested in it, Joe. I was. Wow. But it was a lot of it in the early days was to do with programming. And then as gradually the computers began to take over. And there were more people of my vintage being left behind because they were going into classes with a load of people. And some of these could type and some couldn't. Yeah, and it was all very uneven. So I just saw an opening there for one-to-one training, which worked out much better. I did a course.
How long were you doing that for?
I was doing it for about 10 years until I got ill. I got cancer and gone now, thank God.
Yeah.
And I gave it up for about a year, and then I went back to it again. Very, you know, on a lesser business, but still doing it.
Yeah.
Still doing it. I used to do a lot of courses for FOSS and that, which was very good.
Oh, very good. Very good. You've so much energy and vim as well, hopefully.
Yeah, well, you see, this is it. I'm not boasting, but I just feel I have a lot more to give to this life than I'm able to give in here. You know, it's just not possible. And I love my garden and I have animals and all that sort of thing. But my world has narrowed so much since I came in here to nobody's fault.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just not in the right place.
Yeah, you're an amazing woman. You're giving us so many insights.
So many insights
into the different... the different scenarios people can end up in, and the way the state, and a lot of people rightly say the Fair Deal scheme is a good scheme if you in that predicament, but for a lot of people it's the only way of accessing help
from
the state.
That's right. Exactly, Joe. They brought it in because they didn't want people put into nursing homes, I think by their families and then the people selling the home. And so it was, they wanted the home there to live to, if say a farmer, his family would inherit it eventually. But I have no family, I'm not married, and I've nobody to worry about in that sense. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be depriving anyone, you know.
Yeah.
I'm depriving only myself at the moment.
Well, the government have said, now it's about 6 months ago since they said it, and a few people actually confused it. When they said it, they thought it was going to happen immediately, and nothing happened immediately, that they would alter the Fair Deal scheme to encourage people to rent out their
homes.
And
I know,
homes.
Joe.
Yeah, but anyway.
Sure, I've been reading that for months.
I know.
And this government, as you know, is not a fast mover. So I don't know when that will go through. It'll be too late for me at the rate it's going. You know,
I doubt it. Given your energy, but but Jane, how do you feel in yourself since you organised to go into the nursing home?
I get very depressed at times, Joe. Very depressed, to be honest with you. Now I do, because I've lost my house. My dog died at the beginning of the shutdown, and my next door neighbour died as well. So all these losses are difficult to cope with. I'm praying quite a bit every day and every night to give me an answer to the little problems that come up on a daily basis.
Okay.
And it does work a lot of the time,
okay,
you know.
Well, don't give up. Don't give up.
If
you rented out a room, anyway, there's loads of ideas coming in. If you rented out a room then that's difficult as well, renting out a room in your house, and then people worried about COVID, and then...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I know. See.
Okay, we keep in touch. Will you keep your ideas turning over there and keep emailing and keep... Stay on that laptop and keep being curious and interested
in
reading.
I will, Joe.
I will,
and it's great to talk to you.
And
thank you for listening to me. That makes a whale of a difference.
Well, it's a privilege to listen to you, Jane. That's Jane. That's the wonderful Jane. Jane McNulty. Thanks, Jane.
Thank you, Joe.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Back to the opening call. Imelda May contacted us. She wants to add her name in championing the idea of St. Bridget's Day. Bridget's Day, February the 1st, becoming a public holiday, initially in honour of the frontline workers, and indeed in memory of those who passed. Nearly 5,000 people who died from this horrible, horrible pandemic. And as I say, a lot of people in support. Breda Raggart. Breda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
So you support Imelda May?
Well, to a point, but the name is dying out, and that's the reality. So the majority of people call Breda or Bridget, you know, the different variations of it, are over 60, 70, 80.
Okay.
And my own family, my father's mother was Bridget, my mother's mother was Bridget.
Okay.
She came from a family of nine, and out of that, there's five of us Bridgets. And my father had, there's three in his family, so there's three Bridgets in that family. And then going on, my mother has 32 grandchildren. She's still alive. She's 96. And 18 granddaughters, and only one was called Bridge.
Wow.
And then you're going on, and she has 12 great-granddaughters, and there's no Bridgets.
Oh, God.
And I have three daughters, no Bridgets. I have 12 grandchildren, but seven of them are girls and no Bridgets. So the Central Statistics Office also said that the name is dying out. And really, the only time it's ever mentioned is the 1st of February. And it's a great day. And St. Bridget was a great woman. But people, I know there are some people, but it is dying out. So the
shortcuts for Bridget are Breda.
Breda, Bridie. That's right, Bridie. Yeah.
And what about Biddy? Is that a shortcut for Bridget?
Oh, it is, yeah. A lot of people were... I forgot about that one. Yeah, a lot of people. I have down here Bridget Breed, Breeder Breed. And there's, you know, Bridie as well.
Bridie,
my mother would have been called Bridie. And there would be Biddy as well.
Well, would that be the worry that it would end up being called Bridie's Day or Biddy's Day?
Well, I don't mind. Actually, I'd never like my name, but as I got older, I sort of...
Oh, you never liked your name. Okay.
No, never liked the name Bridget. Oh. But if you look at it, there's the old names are Molly and Jacks and James. All those are still very, very... prominent in babies' names now.
Well, Bridget is dying out. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks indeed. That's Breda Raggart in Kilkenny. Today's programme was produced by the producer, Rebecca Bridget Meehan, research by Richie Bridget Byrne, sound by Liam Bridget Mullen, and the BCO is Daniel Bridget Keating, and Ray Bridget Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Going electric? Plug into the Kia e-range of EVs and PHEVs.
Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815. Stays open until 3:15 p.m. Or email joe@rte.ie.